Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started. So welcome to the We Know Show with my special guest for you today, Dr. Joseph Yi, who's a board-certified addiction psychiatrist specializing in holistic psychiatry and detoxification. After graduation from medical school, Dr. Yi went on to do his psychiatric residency at Cooper University Hospital. It was there at the heart of Camden where he learned to treat some of the most challenging cases of psychiatric addiction. As a resident physician, he apprenticed under Dr. Joel Fuhrman on nutritional therapy for mental health treatment and worked at several dual diagnosis facilities, mental health and substance abuse. Since starting his solo private practice in 2009, Dr. Yi has helped patients overcome their dependency to opiates, alcohol and other substances through his modern detox program, which provides an individualized tapering plan on an outpatient basis as an alternative to going into an inpatient facility for treatment. He integrates motivational counseling, nutritional therapy, exercise, science, yoga and spirituality. Dr. Joe, we just had a quick little chat before we hit record, and I just want you to know, like, I'm so excited about this chat because your content, it resonates with me and my messaging, especially where I'm at right now, as opposed to where I was at in the last few years, which is something I mentioned to Dr. Joe before we hit record. But I also love that you talk about sleeping and eating well, exercising and connecting as being critical for mental wellness. And I totally agree with that. These four pillars, as you call them, they require us to not only get rid of, say, toxic substances and foods, but as you say, toxic people in our life and how true connection is actually the opposite of addiction. And I respect so much that you use your social platforms to move people beyond fear, beyond division and insensitivity. And instead, you disrupt, I believe, mainstream agenda with humor, with necessary tension, radical honesty, creativity, empathy, and connection. And this, I believe, is how change is made and what I feel when I watch your content. So I'm so excited to have you on the show. Welcome, Dr. Joe.
I'm super honored to be here, Renate. And wow, what an intro. That was amazing. First off, I'd like to start off by sharing with you that I've been a big fan of I've had a thing for Australians for a long time. Like growing up, I'm a very big avid tennis fan. So, you know, the four majors in tennis is the Australian Open, French Open, Wimbledon, and the US Open. So I've been to every single one of those events, but the Australian Open, it's kind of hard to get there from where I am. And I always have to wake up like 3-4 o'clock in the morning to watch like Roger Federer, you know, Steffi Graf, Andre Agassi, my heroes and all that. So I've always had this respect and admiration for Australians. And somehow, I guess over the past couple of years, you know, some of the things that were happening in Australia, like I felt that it was the right thing to create some content to bring awareness to the people here, because a lot of people just don't give a shit about what's happening, you know? So I felt like that was the right thing to do. And apparently it resonated pretty well with Australians. So I'm super grateful to be here with you. And I'm sure you have audiences all around the world, but I'm sure there's some Australians listening to this too. Like, thank you guys. Like, it means so much to me. I'm like a big fan of you guys.
So good. I'm a big tennis fan as well. I grew up playing it. And I can tell you, I've gone to enough Australian Opens for the both of us, Dr. Joe. So got you covered.
You mentioned something about my content with my humor. I just want people to know, I never create content with the intent of cracking people up. I'm like, okay, like Do you know Kelly Brogan, MD?
Yes.
She's a homeless. Yeah. So she said, look, man, whatever you do, whenever you make content, make sure it comes from your heart. Yeah. Make sure there's passion in that. So I was like, okay, that's a great advice. So somehow it ends up funny, but that's just the way I speak. And as I'm making it, I'm like, okay, this is funny. But my daughter will be like, okay, hey, make me laugh. Or my friends are here. Do something to crack us up. I don't know what to do. So, you know, it's just the way I speak. It just comes from my heart. If it's funny, great. So thank you.
Well, I think it's funny because it does come from your heart. I don't think I don't think people who are funny are trying to be funny. I know that sounds like, well, what do you mean comedians are funny? But for me personally, especially in the last few years, looking at memes has been some of the best comedy I have experienced in my life. I don't think there's been a time of more laughter through the tragedy because of those memes. And I think that you're almost like your content is like the video version of a meme, but it's brilliant. And I love that you also come from a background where you were also a musician. And I know that that ties in really kind of beautifully with what you do today and how you speak your and why you speak your truth, I should say, but also the ability to be able to edit the content that you do in such a engaging and fun and colorful, I should say, way. But maybe just give us a bit of a backstory about, you know, medical school, becoming a musician, growing your own business. I know that you once mentioned that medical school was an extreme discomfort. So maybe just tell us a bit about that.
You know, growing up, I'm sure you heard the story. You know, I grew up very poor. I was bullied in school. The girls that I liked not only did not like me, but they made fun of me. So I had this chip on my shoulder, you know, growing up. And sometimes pain is the most powerful motivator for an individual. So I made the decision like, okay, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to become somebody and that will show them. So it's you know, primal way of thinking, but that's what I thought at the time. And it motivated me. And I did pretty well in school. I got a full scholarship to college. I actually got into medical school early. But when you go into a program like medical school, and we can say whatever we want about the allopathic medical system, but it's really hard. And when you have pretty shitty reasons to want to become a doctor, like women, money, and social clouts, that's not enough to get you past gross anatomy, where you have to cut open a dead body and examine the hearts and crush the skull and look at the brain. And it was just a nightmare course. So after a year of that, I dropped out of medical school and I decided to pursue music. And at that point, my parents kicked me out of the house and I was living with my bandmates for about 3 years. And interestingly, that's where I learned how to like program music, I guess, editing content now. That's where I learned how to socially connect with individuals, because my social skills weren't the best at the time. But when you work with musicians and they're all a bunch of characters, you got to learn to navigate their personalities. And I did a ton of drugs and it was fun for the first year or two. But the third year, I started getting really sick, mentally ill. I had way too much poison in my body. I wasn't eating enough. And then finally, one day I threw up in the middle of the street because I was so sick. And then a bunch of people were making fun of me again. And at that point, I said, look, I got to do something with my life other than music. This thing, music thing isn't working out. But this time, Renat, I actually had purpose. I had a very strong meaning as to why to go back to medical school. And this time I want to do something with mental health and or addiction recovery. But the problem at the time was I had to get myself straightened out and I had to figure out a way to detox myself. So, you know, I didn't know anything about health and wellness. What I did do was I moved back home. And I just started eating a lot of fruits and I started working out. And, you know, your gut could lead you to some basic things about health and wellness. So it's pretty interesting how it's so revolutionary now. Eating clean, sleeping right, connecting with the right people, getting some exercise. And this is the kind of work that I do. And quite frankly, if most of the people in my practice that walk through that door right there, if they just practice the four pillars of mental wellness, sleep right, eat right, exercise right, connect right, I would say greater than 51% of the people coming in to see me will not need to see me. So that's kind of like how my journey got started. But the music thing actually was a blessing in disguise because that's where I felt like I got my PhD in the kind of stuff that I do. I didn't learn anything in medical school. I got a diploma right there, but that just shows that I was able to pass the exams. But that's not what I'm sharing with you today. I didn't really learn much to help people out with that.
Oh, I love that story. But something you also say is you don't like the term think positive. So tell us about that, because I find that so fascinating. And I have to agree, but I'll tell you why after you explain to our audience why you don't like the term think positive.
Yeah, because when you're I have mixed feelings about that. But when I made a post about thinking positive, and you know, when you're in a really pissed off state, the last thing you want is for someone to be like, "Hey, man, think positive," and you just want to like punch them in the face or something like that. So, if it's hard for people to think positive, I would say it's a lot easier or less difficult to focus on what's right. Like, think on what is decent in your life right now. So, for example, I am colorblind, and I imagine you have the ability to see color, but I don't see color the way you guys do. So, you know, but at least I could see. And at least for you guys, I think a lot of people take basic things like seeing color for granted. I ruptured my Achilles about 3 or 4 years ago playing tennis, and I couldn't walk for almost a year. And when that happens, oh my God, you really appreciate walking. So like right now, the first thing, if I'm ever in a negative state, I focus on what's right. And the first thing I tell myself is, hey, I could walk without a limp. And it's a big deal. I don't know if anyone listening to this actually like messed up their leg, but if you can't walk, it's a big deal. And you don't realize that until you break something in your body. So, that was then. But now I'm actually thinking positive is kind of cool again, because I've come to realize, especially after everything that's happened in the past 2 years, like a lot of people underwent a lot of stress and trauma and so on. Thinking positive is a discipline. It's really hard to focus on thinking on what's right and what's good and what you love, especially when there's so much negativity and distractions all around us. And even the truthers, man, I don't mean to call these guys out, but you know, it's like, oh, the next kid died from the vaccine and blah, blah, blah. And the government's doing that. And it's like, we get it, man. We get it. What's the solution? So we're surrounded by that. We're addicted by that, those kind of contents. And I find that it's negativity is actually the default mode. It's the fight, flight, default mode. And it's actually easier to think negative, and it takes a lot more energy and effort to focus on what's right and the solution. So I'm trying to encourage everyone to think positive, because it is a discipline. And that's something that we have to practice on a regular basis.
And I mean, we've talked about this, haven't we, Joe, that we are mostly raised in a society of rewards and punishment. I know that's the world I come from as well. Mm-hmm. And the idea of thinking positive, it almost feels, and in the this is sort of my perspective of it, is look, almost like a pressure to not be in a sense of punishment. You know, like if I said to somebody, you know, don't think of a pink elephant, you'll think of a pink elephant, right? So if you say to somebody, think positive, and they're not feeling well, or they're feeling, you know, like they're punishing themselves for feeling negative. And I think that's part of the problem, is that we actually have to move through things, not necessarily around them. And I think when we're telling ourselves to think positive, it's often because we're punishing ourselves for thinking negative. And from that perspective, I really resonated with that message, because I don't think thinking positive is a way to bypass what you like, you know, your shadow work type stuff, right? So that's where I was really resonating with that, because we do live in a society where either you comply or you sing kumbaya. Like those are the two extremes, really. You know?
Right. Well, I wouldn't expect people to go from 0 to 180 for sure. Mm. But that's why I'm a big fan of breath work and calming the mind through the art of meditation. And at least it kind of allows you to just reset for a moment. And you're right. And then it's really difficult to just be like, okay, I just love everything in my life. But people could start very small too. For example, I love mangoes. I think mangoes are like the greatest thing that I've ever eaten in my life. Like the texture of it, the flavor of it is sweet and juicy. You get the right one. And if I want to mentally discipline myself to start focusing on what's right in my life, the first thing I'll think about is like, okay, you know what? I could walk. So thank God I could walk. And you know what? I really love mangoes. And I start looking or thinking into the taste of it and imagine what it's like to eat a mango right now. I naturally just feel a little bit more positive. And then from then, I think about a third thing, like my daughter or my kids, and how much I appreciate tennis and that Novak Djokovic is back in Australia this year. That's awesome. So then it could, as long as you could start small and, you know, just a couple of things here and build upon that, I definitely think that that's a great way to help rewire the brain to focusing on the light. And I'm not trying to say that people should be foolish and just like, oh yeah, let's just think positive and ignore anything that's happening. But we spend enough time on, I'm sure we spend a lot of time on a regular basis focusing on what's wrong with this world. And I think people practice worrying and anxiety so much that I think it's time for us to, at least for 5 minutes a day, practice believing in something that hasn't happened yet, but maybe an awesome outcome, and train our brain to at least rewire it to focus on what is right. Because look, let's be real about something, man. The people who are watching, listen to this are pretty intelligent human beings, you know, and we all are in agreement that there's some nefarious shit happening. And Agenda 2030 is like, you could Google it online. It's actually there all over the place, right? So if this is going to be a drawn out spiritual war, I really believe that it's absolutely critical for us to be healthy in the mind, body, and spirit to fight these guys, to rebel. And I believe that the greatest form of activism and rebellion is to stay healthy in the mind, body, and spirit. So in a way, it's kind of like training. It's exercising to stay like fit so that we can keep doing what we're doing collectively.
No, that's so good. I mean, obviously, you've been quite vocal about questioning the dominant narrative, and you've been exposing your perspective of the corruption, and I think we all appreciate that, you know. And your approach lately is very much in alignment with where I'm at as well, which is that 80-20 rule you talk about. Mm-hmm. And maybe just expand on that from the perspective of mental health. I mean, what advice would you give to, like you said, the truthers who are speaking out about this dominant narrative? Like, what's the mental health message about the way in which you go about that?
So if I may explain a little bit about how I got this 80-20 conclusion, and some people might not like what I'm about to say, but I am a Western allopathic medicine doctor. I'm a psychiatrist. And I've recently been trained in providing ketamine therapy. Ketamine is an anesthetic that's been around since the 60s and 70s. Recently been approved for depression here in the United States. I'm not sure what it's like in Australia. And it offers a psychedelic journey into your subconsciousness for you to explore some wild shit, like your shadow working and certain things that's been repressed. But not only that, it helps like rewire your brain and helps suppress certain parts of your brain that's responsible for like stimulating dark, depressing, disappointing, traumatic memories too. So it could actually allow you to like, it's easier for people to think positive because they're not trapped by this other center of your brain called the lateral habenula that like overshadows the positive like reward center. So there's a lot of like neurobiological things that are happening. And it's very weird for me to say that because at least with like plant medicine, like psilocybin or ayahuasca, you know, and I'm sure some of the people here can resonate with that. I choose to believe that there's some sort of a conscious energy that wants humans to do better, to expand our awareness. It's very difficult for me. Trust me, people, listen to this. For me to believe that ketamine actually has any good intentions, but I think it ultimately comes from the person. And I went into like, okay, let me see what's deep down in my subconsciousness. And let me see if I could help some people out with it, help myself out. And one of the trips that I had, I saw a vision of like billions of souls staring at a screen and their energy was dimming right before them. And they were seeing Fox News and CNN and even the truthers saying everyone's dying from this and, you know, Joe Biden doing whatever. And, you know, it was just like, it was a very intense moment for me. Like I felt people's energy. And, you know, one could consider it a bad trip. I considered it an amazing lesson. So I came out of that trip and I said, you know, if I actually care about the people who support my accounts and if I really care about this movement, my mission moving forward has to be raising people's vibrations and their frequencies. But at the same time, you know, there is some nefarious things that are happening in this world. And I believe that the 80-20 rule, like, okay, 20% of time, let me call out some BS that's happening that I believe that people need to be aware of with this AI agenda and this money agenda, the financial reset agenda. And 80% of time, let me focus on how to get people healthy in the mind, body, and spirits. And maybe I could offer some level of humor if I don't have a solution to it. Or give some important tips that they could work on, like simple things that they could work on every single day so that we could all get stronger together. Because we're all one, right? We're all connected.
You know, there's this kind of like spectrum of, you know, you're either listening to somebody like Fauci or you're on the other end of the spectrum and you're listening to like you and I listen to like the Amanda Vollmers of the world. And the thing is and I've used this as a barometer, like a, can't even say the word, barometer. Of like where my energy kind of flows. And that is that I know that I do this, is I tend to be drawn to people that guide their audience back to themselves rather than listen to what I have to say and do what I say here or listen to what I have to say and do what I say there. So like that's, for me, opposite ends of the spectrum of the same line, right? So where I tend to draw my energy from and where I tend to do my work from, what place do I have to go in to know that I'm doing my best work, is I connect to a creator. I connect to my ancestral bloodlines because I know they chose me to be here in this moment in time and they've built me for this time. And also the with nature, with Mother Earth. So I'm completely grounded and I'm walking with so much strength. And so when I'm looking at information, I'm wondering, and my filter is that information guiding me back to me and my intuition, or is it guiding, is this information guiding me to listen to what they have to say and go along their intuition, right? So this is a completely different level. And I know that has a lot to do with mental health, because for so much of my life, I was guided by authority. It was the system that raised me. So to step out of that world and be guided and reclaiming your own authority and your own sovereignty, this has been the biggest work of the last few years. And like you, I mean, I know you would have heard this, and I've sort of, I guess people are kind of quoting me this on this at the moment, which is kind of weird because I kind of think everyone should be saying this. But over the last few years, I've had a lot of people come up to me because of the work that I do in the community. And they say to me, oh, Renate, I'm awake. You know, this kind of like word of being awake. And I'm like, wow, awake. Okay. Well, we're way past awake, because I'm like, what good is it being awake if you're still in bed? Like, this is the rise and shine on your feet, participate in the change moment. You know what I mean? Like, this is where we're at. Like, you want to talk to me about being awake in bed, mate? I'm over there. Like, I'm too busy to sit with you on the corner of the bed talking about your dreams. Like, we need to be using what it is that we are seeing to create the change, and not to bang on about how they need to change for us to feel better about our own lives. Like, that's never going to happen. And you don't beat that drum and expect that they're going to change. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. You know, anyway, so
that's a mic drop right there. How am I supposed to come up with anything better than what you just said? I
mean, you will. Wow. I'm sure you will. But it's just, you know, the same message of what you're saying, which is, you know, it's redundant to, is it's not what you know, it's how you feel with what you know and what you do about it, right? Because the energy of how you participate in conversation, you could be telling people and ramming it down their throats, or you could be really conscious in your inquiry and asking questions that come from a place of unity, not from a place of I know better than you. And I think people use the term awake as if they're one up from someone who's asleep, and it's not that far off.
And you know, our buddy, the great chef Pete Evans, you know, he said a long time ago, like, I just hate it when people call each other sheep. And people have t-shirts with you know, no sheeps allowed and all this stuff, and I'm not down with that.
No, me either.
Are you familiar with the Stanley Milgram experiment back in the 70s in Stanford, the shock treatment experiment?
So
they had these participants, like, you know, ask questions. If the person on the other side of the room got it wrong, you were told to shock someone. And it turned out that 80% of the people did what they were told. They obeyed. You know, so the Milgram experiment exposed that 80% of people don't have the moral compass to defy authority, but 20% do. So, you know, I love what you said about, you know, you were meant to be here in this time. We, the people watching this, we are 20% of people who are willing to defy authority. And that's great. And I think there's more now with all the things that are happening. More people are finding out. But amongst the people who know what's up, there's a certain percentage who are still only complaining about all the things that are wrong without offering any form of solution. I think we're past that. I think the past 2 years, this is happening. We don't know what's happening. It's confusing. There's a lot of fear and anxiety associated with this. So we need to look towards each other and say, look, this is what you need to know. But now, and there's still things happening, but I would appreciate it if we could shift the consciousness into a new perspective where we're trying to offer solutions instead of just complaining about this, that, and the other. So if I'm complaining, or if I'm raising awareness that there's this new thing, ChatGPT, and this is this AI chatbot that, like, is basically thinking for humans and it's making humans more lazier, and I'm saying this is what we need to do to keep our brains active, at least I'm offering a solution. If you're just complaining about the fact that the government is spending all this money and they're spending more money to Ukraine or whatever, okay, so then what is the solution? Like, what should we do? Should we not pay taxes? Like, give us some sort of an action plan, because what I want everyone here to check out for themselves is, How do you feel after you watch one of these videos or you check out someone's content? And is the net feeling like something that raises your frequency, where you actually want to take action, you want to help improve yourself in some way? And if so, great, keep learning from those people. If not, then you might want to save your energy towards something else, like being more present with your family or going for a run or something. You know, so, you know, I feel like there's some messages out there and some truthers and leaders that are draining our energy at this point. And I don't appreciate that. And I don't want to vibe with those people anymore. And I just want to really help people like you raise awareness, but also raise vibrations too.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, like you just talked about energy vampires. And one of the main things of the message, but you know, what we deliver to our audiences on a daily basis is, yes, these technologies, these experimental technologies, and been, you know, the jabs and the 5G, et cetera, is designed to actually lower vibration. So what's the antidote? It's to raise our vibration. So in a roundabout way, nature is playing her part to really bring us the contrast. I love what Kelly Brogan said to me when I interviewed her. She goes, we love contrast. It's like when we really need to pee, that's when we enjoy peeing. When we really want to eat is when we enjoy eating. And these times have created that sense of like almost like edginess that has made us really truthful, really honest, really clear who our friends are. Like it's taken us to that extreme, but in a great way. And if we honestly look at the last 3 years, I don't know anyone that has stood in there and exercised their own freedom who is not better off today. I don't know one single person. Believe me, I know a lot of people, but not a single person is worse off. So what does that have to say about your own inner evolution, your own inner strength? It has so much to say about what it means to not ask somebody for freedom, but recognize it in yourself and recognize like now, look at you and me talking, right? Is we've met people all around the world, you and I, and it's like this interconnected web, this connection that you talk about, which is the antidote to addiction and all these mental health issues. It's almost like them cornering us have brought us closer together. And we have to recognize that we're actually stronger. And if I tell you what though, if you are sitting and listening to this interview and you feel alone somewhere in the world and you don't know that you, or you don't feel that you have your people, I'm unapologetic about this. I say, go find them.
Oh, they're there.
They're everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. And I'm not very good on excuses. Like I'm not sort of like, yeah, but I don't, but I. And I don't do well with that stuff. And people who know me know that about me, because I tend to think that the best work we do is when we're pushed into tension. And that's where birth comes through as well. It's a necessary tension to birth something new. I know this as a mother, you know this as a father as well. It's that that's where the juice is. And so when we embrace tension as part of our growth and part of our ability to create change, then we don't need to think positive and push against it. We recognize that it's there for some level of wisdom and we embrace it, we embody, and therefore we're not fearful of struggle, because struggle for most people feels like a failure. But the last 3 years we've struggled, sure, some people have struggled, but are you better off today? The answer is, in my opinion, you are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I would say I really try to feed people's motivation to help create change. A lot of what I work is to help people to get from point A to point B, whatever it is that point B is. But, you know, I would say 20% of the time I'm successful in helping people help themselves change through feeding their motivation, through inspiration or so on. Unfortunately, 80% is that desperation route where people change because they have to. And even for myself, like it was like when I was in a really desperate state as a musician, had nothing. I was like, okay, this music career isn't going anywhere. I'm loaded up on drugs. I'm hungry as hell. I'm depressed and anxious and I feel miserable. That's when I said, okay, enough. Like I'm not willing to move towards this pathway anymore. And I'm going to go back to medical school to do something about this. What am I going to do? Okay, it has to be something with mental health and or addiction recovery. So it was that desperate state that not only taught me, gave me the PhD again for the kind of work that I do, but it motivated me to never want to go back to there. Because I don't know if you or the people listening to this or watching this ever went hungry for a night. Like you guys probably fasted for a couple of days and so on. But if you wanted to eat and you couldn't eat because you didn't have money, it does something to your mind. So that's, I never want to experience that again. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. Over the past several years, people were backed into a corner, and with all these mandates and all this madness happening, and it forced us to say enough and allowed us to take action. So I'm one of the people who, quote unquote, awoken to some of the stuff that was happening in 2020. I always knew that there was some weird stuff going on with psychiatry and mental health and like big pharma. Like, I've always known that. But as far as obviously connecting with people like you and the great people watching this, like, you know, people message me and show me videos, and then you talk to people and like, wow, I wasn't able to connect the dots with all this. So would I ever want to go back to the old ways? No. And I do believe that humanity is better now. But again, we are in this pivotal point where I think a lot of people are exhausted, and we need to nourish our peoples collectively instead of constantly sharing and spreading bad news. So I really appreciate the kind of work that you're doing and the direction that you're going into as well.
Yeah. And I think satire has the ability to change culture. You know, like if you can ridicule something and do it in a way that sends a message, that's part of, you know, changing culture, and that's useful. I mean, we talked about it, but I think this is what we're designed, we're built for. We recognize that this is the new era of health and freedom, and we want to be part of it, and that we choose that every single day. And that's a choice, like you say. And I think that's a beautiful thing to really value and recognize in our own lives and how much work we've done over the last few years to build ourselves up, because there's activism shadow as well. It's like there's so many people that I now can see clear as day doing activism rather than fight that they have within, they're fighting everything outside. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And Kelly, talk to me about that. We had a big discussion about it, and it's so true. Like, you really have to check yourself and why you're doing what you're doing, and making sure that comes from a vessel that is really well-intended and with integrity. Because if you're complaining about people masking up, but you're really masking up a lot of things about you, I mean, how is that any different, really, in the scheme of things? So let's talk about, you know, like the fact that Big Pharma, it does gear us towards the absence of death. And then we've got Big Tech that gears us towards the absence of life. So what do you have to say about that?
Big Pharma is it's a very strange place. Where do I start with this? They give us the illusion of health through masking symptoms, which we all know. And just a quick little background about some of the weird stuff that happens in Big Pharma. You know, they always hire these beautiful women as pharmacy drug reps to come in here and to sell me on the fact that this drug is great for this, that, and the other. And, you know, I actually use prescription medications to help people taper off of prescription drugs. It's not wise to just stop like an antidepressant medication. You could go into withdrawal from that. So I actually use medications to help people. That's like my specialty with detox. And they do a lot of really shady things, and they push the illusion of health through drugs, which I'm sure the people listening to this are well aware of what's happening. As far as Big Tech, what did you say about that?
So the Big Tech was gearing us towards the absence of life. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, Big Pharma, and, the absence of death.
And with Big Tech, what I'm seeing now is I work with a lot of like Gen Zs, these young guns that were, I think, born after 97 or so on. And so many people are overloaded with information, but they lack basic common sense. And I feel like their life force has somewhat diminished from staring at the screen so much. Big Tech, you know, their objective is to get you glued to the screen. Whatever they could do to get you distracted and glued to the screen. Is it to make more money? Is there a more nefarious agenda behind it? I don't know. But ultimately, they want you to stare at the screen as much as possible. And that has, from my observations, I'm seeing that these kids are lacking social intelligence and basic social skills. And it's almost like they're so used to communicating through the screen that when they connect with other people in person, they have anxiety like this. They just feel socially anxious. And everyone, their mother nowadays, it seems like they have anxiety. So I'm seeing all that to say that I'm seeing more anxiety, and I feel like a diminish in the energy life force in people when they're staring at their phone too much. So that's what I'm seeing. You know, some big lies coming from Big Pharma, but also technology draining the people's energy life force. Mm-hmm. I have no way of proving that other than from my clinical observations. And I'm sure the people watching this and you too maybe could resonate that as well, that there are people who are connecting with nature and they just have a different glow and a vibration around them versus people who are always glued to their phone or on a screen. Mm-hmm. And that's some of the things that from my clinical observations as far as what I'm seeing there. So I guess, is that a death in some way? I suppose. But yeah, I'm noticing the life force changes.
Yeah. Alison McDowell talks about the Moonshot Project. Have you heard about that?
No.
No. So it's this project, it's a government project. And basically what it insinuates is that by 2050, humans will exist outside the need for a physical mind and body and time and space. So she explains that, well, how do you actually get there by 2050 unless you essentially try to make the necessity of having a physical body a burden? So create enough chronic illness and pain that people will be glad to upload their consciousness into some avatar, which is what that movie is based on. You know, the human form was not good enough for him. The earth was not good enough for him. So let's upload our consciousness to this metaverse where they do it better and, you know, and fly dragons. So this was the impetus for that film, is that kind of programming that we know the films do. But essentially it does beg the question, like 2050 is not that far away, and we're supposed to get the understanding that the government, the World Economic Forum, you know, all these speakers that join on their private jets and go there are there to talk to us about merging with technology. It is essentially an anti-life agenda. I mean, this isn't a theory. This is how they speak about post-humanism, right? And so yeah. I guess, you know, if we just go back to medication, you know, there's sort of like this inverted, you know, the media do it. They kind of invert reality. Psychiatric drugs to a degree do that as well. But you once said that it's even harder to get off prescription drugs than it is to get off street drugs. And we know that these devices, we know because, I mean, I come from a telco background. What I uncovered is that, you know, not only are they testing these devices on a plastic mannequin, which is a fraudulent test, they engineered these devices for addiction so they could surveil us, right? This was all part of, you know, this is now public knowledge. I mean, there's films that have been done about it. Social Dilemma talk about it as well. But these dopamine hits that people experience from their devices, that's real. These are dopamine hits. But oh, yeah. I think it's even harder for people to get off devices than it is to get off prescription drugs at this point in our trajectory.
Yeah, back in the day, if you want to get a drug, you would have to go out into some shady area and buy a drug. Or you would have to go out and get some alcohol from the shop. Now we have our drug right here in our pockets the whole time. And all you have to do to get more of it is to recharge it. So, yeah, and it's also, you know, it's this quick fixed dopamine hit. And people's self-esteems are being dosed by their likes and their views, and especially for the younger generation too. You know, the younger kids, they really care about money, sex, and clout, social clout. Who are they in society? Are they important? Whatnot. So, and especially for the younger girls in the middle school areas, we've seen in the past decade that there was like about 150% increase in suicide rates amongst the middle school girls. If you look at the high school, early college, it's more like a 70% increase. But why the past decade? Well, because sometime in like 2011, 2012 was the first time where social media and the smartphone was fused into one, and greater than 50% of the American population had social media on their smartphones. So there are a lot of social psychologists stating that that's the main reason why there's such an increase in this, you know, mental health or mental illness wave that are happening with the suicide rates and the depression, anxiety, attention issues, laziness, fatigue, sleeping issues, and so on. So, yeah, absolutely. It's that I think is going to be the shift of what I'll be talking about as far as warning people about in terms of like the addiction potential with technology more so than the substances. Not to undermine fentanyl and opioid addiction in America, and I'm not sure how it is in Australia, but that's a big deal too. But I think with the kids nowadays, our future, really, I really have to get the message out there to the parents to try to warn them that this too much of this stuff is not a good thing. And we're going to eventually be enslaved to technology if we don't take control of it now.
You know, you spoke about media distraction in a recent interview where I saw a clip of it actually, and you gave the example of paying attention to, say, Kanye West, when that's just distracting you from the central bank digital currencies pilot program, or the fact that AI is estimated to eliminate, was it like 800 million jobs worldwide, 70 million just in the US, and that's all 2030, as well as robot automation. There's all this other stuff, but why is it that you feel it's so easy to distract humanity in the online information space?
Well, so negativity and or things like fear and outrage kind of content is very addicting, and it's feeding our addiction. It kind of gives you like a little bit of an adrenaline rush, and things like that, interestingly, have a tolerance too. Like if you say something shocking, it's one thing, but over the past 2 years, with the number of shocking news here and there, people have gotten kind of like numb to like, okay, another person died from the vaccine per se. So now you I feel like everyone, including the truthers, quote unquote, are like doubling down on the greater fear, outrage content, which is getting more eyeballs on them, but it's not really doing us any good. So, and I feel like the media too, like recently in America, there was like a diesel fuel scare. They said that by Thanksgiving, November 24th, I believe, we're going to run out of diesel fuel. And then everyone was panicking and stuff like that. So they always have to up their ante as far as like the next bad news. So just point being is negativity and bad news has a tolerance too. And that's one of the things I'm advising people to not get addicted and dependent on that kind of stuff. Hold on. What was the original question? I think I went off on a little tangent.
It was around the distraction. So why we're so easily distracted with our technology.
Yeah. And we're getting easily distracted because people actually like that feeling of the adrenaline rush that they get from it. It is like a high in a way. Like if someone goes bungee jumping per se, you know, you get a high off of that. That's a healthier way of getting an adrenaline rush. But people are getting a hit from watching some of this negative content. But the consequence of that adrenaline cortisol hit is you feel exhausted after watching these kind of materials. So but you know, to your question before, as far as the distractions with some of the things now that are happening recently with Kanye West, and now like this big thing with Elon Musk coming out and saying, hey, some of the disinformation was correct and we're going to reinstate Donald Trump and all this stuff. And then people are all rah, rah, rah behind that. It's like, do we not recognize that this is the man who is behind Neuralink? And I actually believe that he's the new face. I don't think Bill Gates did the best job in doing what he was supposed to do. So I feel like he's the kind of like the new Bill Gates, who's like the smart, cool guy, the philanthropist kind of guy who's really trying to help people and getting people to lure in into this nefarious agenda for 2030. That's what I believe is happening.
Oh, you know that I wholeheartedly agree with that. I've done so many posts on Elon Musk interviews. I agree. I think he's the facelift version of the Bill Gates. Yeah, absolutely. we could talk about Elon just as a whole episode, because there's just so much to unpack about that man and his, you know, pro-transhumanism, pro-jab, pro-Neuralink, Starlink, which is radiation from space, and the Internet of Things and everything he's invested in with the metaverse. So, yeah, I mean, in as much as you may think that this man is all about free speech, the idea of transhumanism takes away free will. So how do you marry up a person that is pro no free will with a man that is now considered to be pro-free speech? It's just incongruent, completely incongruent. And I tend to call him high fructose corn syrup. He's just the sugar daddy of Twitter, and he's continued data, you know, and he's all about X.com and basically, you know, the everything app, which is X, and you know, he's very inspired by China and WeChat. But there's a little rant on Elon Musk, I think, for anyone that just needed that. Yeah, that felt good. We're supposed to actually, Dr. Joe, we're supposed to, I should say supposed to, find meaning in stress, in addiction, and in anxiety. But it's being used for profit, both from big pharma and big tech. Like the fact that the tech giants know that you have, that you're prone to negative information. Just like you said, it gives you a hit, right? So you're not alone. You're feeling all this crap because everyone else is feeling all this crap. So let's just amplify more crap. They feed on that, and they feed on you wanting to be more beautiful and wanting to be more smart and wanting to be more in touch with what your friends are listening and watching and all this FOMO stuff, right? But it's actually taking us away from the inner work, like the inner evolution work we talked about, because they're profiting and they're controlling through basic human conditioning of rewards and punishment. This is what the devices do. I mean, even just Christmas that just passed, if you're good for the year, you will be rewarded with this. Like, I mean, the premise of it is reward and punishment, right? And generally speaking, what do most people want more than any other gift? It's something that's technology based, right?
These
are like, we've got to just recognize it for what it is. I mean, I did a big post about it hit the mark. Just don't give, you know, cancer causing agents for Christmas. And these AirPods very much radiate right through your brain. And so that was really well received. And people understand that your body is a receiver and transmitter of information. And the more artificial frequency you put around your body, the less you're connected to the natural web of life. I mean, that's just how it is. This is a frequency game. And these technologies, in as much as what they're doing is disrupting your frequencies, they're also reminding you to level up and raise your vibration. And you can make those choices. The choices, they're never taken away from you. When people used to say, oh, my father was forced into getting the jab. And I was like, no, he wasn't. Nobody was forced to do anything in the last few years. We were coerced, sure, we were pressured. Yeah. But there's the idea that force really happened 99.99999% of the time. It wasn't force. It was bowing down and going, all right, well, this is what I'm choosing to do. And when you see it as a choice, and you have to own your choices. And I think this is where we've come to as a society, that we're owning our choices when it comes to the jabs, we're earning our choices when it comes to our technologies. And we have to figure out ways that self-regulate in our own households. Like, we can't expect that we're all sitting at a dinner table with our family and cousins and friends, and half the people on average are on a device. I mean,
absolutely. And one of the things that I've been trying to advise my clients, and I made a post about this too, is that if you're going to give a gift to someone, let's try to offer gifts that bring people together instead of stealing our attention away from each other. So, you know, the goal of social media and technology and all this, it's, you know, they say that it's to connect people, and sure, I guess it can to some degree, and we got connected and so on. But what they really want is to harvest our energy and attention away from the people who matter the most. So, you know, what do every kid want for Christmas and for the holidays? They want a new iPad, a new phone, or some new video game. That's all designed to steal attention away from one another. I actually saw this commercial the other day, and I'm going to post about this tomorrow. My friends told me not to do this, but I'm going to post this. But basically, it's about this device to strengthen your neck in the event that you messed up your neck playing too much video games. So, you know, it shows this kid saying, okay, I've been playing a lot of video games, and my fingers started going numb. I started having all this neuropathic damages from my neck position being away from playing too much video games. And ever since I use this device, my neck got stronger, and now I could play video games again. And I'm like, are they seriously promoting this thing? I mean, why can't you get to the root cause of it and chill out with the video games, which would be the logical thing to say and think. But yeah, they're always trying to do something to distract people. And when we're not unified, obviously it's easier to conquer, you know, humans if we're not really together. So that's one of the things that I think everyone needs to be aware of. And you said something about frequencies. I did an Instagram live with that guy, David Icke, the British bloke, and he gave a very awesome analogy about how these entities, or whatever you want to call it, that are behind this whole agenda, they feed off of our low vibrational frequencies. So it's in their advantage to keep people scared and in this low vibrational state. So the best way to fight back, like we were talking about this whole time, is to raise our vibrations and let's starve them. Because it's almost like a battery for them. Like, the lower vibrational frequencies we have, they're getting charged up. So once I visualize that, I really feel like whatever we could do to share some laughs, hug each other, you know, get to the next level of mind, body, spiritual wellness. That's the best thing that we could do. But you're absolutely right. When you're constantly staring at your screen, you're not really connecting with one another. I mean, you are in a way, but no one really, you know, we've never been more connected before, but it's never been harder to get people to care. And it's just all this instant mindless content that people are addicted to. And it's really separating us from one another, which is not the way to go, obviously.
Yeah. A friend of mine said it's like we stare at the peace in our hands because we can't find the peace in our hearts, you know? And that is a really beautiful understanding of why so many people choose to just distract themselves with this vortex. It's like, you know, if you're in a mall or if you're in a casino, you don't know what time of the day it is because you're completely warped into this kind of like artificial situation, right? And that's the same with your device. It's actually designed to just take you into this vortex where it disconnects you from the natural world. I mean, most people recognize that, like they kind of come off their phone, they go, oh my God, that was 2 hours. Like they don't even have a sense of time. And this is sort of like, you know, it was funny when I, because I've got David Icke coming on the show soon. And I had a chat to Alec, our mutual friend, Alec Zek. Yeah. And we had a really good laugh about this on his summit. Is he's been, and you know, he's been quite heavily censored. I think he's on to like, I don't know how many accounts on Instagram, like 9 or something. Yeah. And I said to him, like, we've got to be careful not to fall into the trap, like you said, this lower vibrational trap of censorship. Because what tends to happen with people, especially in this space that we're in, that get censored, they just like, you know, rev up, like, you trying to censor me, I'm going to get back on, you know, I'm going to show you, you can't censor me, you know what I mean? And so Alex just having this laugh. And I just, in that moment, you see my face, I realize, oh my God, he goes, you're calling me out right now. And I was like, oh, because we're actually still feeding the demon when we're like, and I've done it too. Like, I'd be like, I had 4 of my recent interviews that were taken down where I was being interviewed. And I'm like, all right, I'll just keep doing interviews. You know, what can you do? But it's when we bring that vibration of don't you dare, you can't get me energy. It's like, oh, they've got you now. They've got you now. And this is the most important point I think we're going to come, you know, full circle on right now, which is that if you do what you do from a place of higher vibration and your own freedom and inner truth and authority, nothing can interfere with that. Nothing, not even censorship can interfere with that. And I think that's a really important point that you're making, because most people think they have to be in the fight energy to win this. Because Hollywood has always shown us that if you're Braveheart and you fight, then you win. And it's actually not that at all. You have to resolve your inner shadow fight to be able to win. Like this is the journey. It's the inside out, and it's not like just fight everything out there. It's like we're creating change from the inside out. We know that, we can feel that, and we radiate that every day. So
also if the idea, and one of the things I talked to Alec about is if the idea is to get the word out to as many people as possible, because we're speaking to an echo chamber right now. Like everyone knows what's up. They allow only a certain reach on various social media channels and so on. We got to be smarter in the way we present information, because if it's constantly going to be about, you know, they're doing this, that, and the other, then, you know, these AIs have a way of saying, okay, you know, you didn't technically cross the line, so we're not going to delete your ass today, but, you know, you're going to have a limited amount of reach. You're only going to see, only a certain amount of people are going to see it. So, you know, I actually really dig this guy, Carnivore MD. Like, you know, I'm not, I don't know if you, you like him. Okay. Because some people have mixed feelings about him, but whatever you feel about him, he's calling out big food, and he's teaching people how to eat at least the way that he believes is the best way for humanity and so on. But he has incredible reach. And I had a private conversation with him. He's like, dude, I agree with everything that you're saying. But when I started calling out the vaccine and all this stuff, I got deleted. And that doesn't do me any good. So now I don't talk about that. But if you, in the grand scheme of things, if this is one of the things that they're doing that I don't agree with, let me focus on all these other things that try to help empower people and get them healthier. So I actually think that's brilliant. You know, it's a great way to, like, his content is energizing, like whether you agree with him or not, like you might want to try some of the stuff that he's talking about. And I know a lot of people who've eaten the carnivore diets and they do well, and other people do the vegan thing, they do well too. But I think there is a smarter way for us to fight. You know, ultimately the idea is to get awareness out to as many people as possible, because we do need some more numbers. I think we have a pretty decent amount right now. I would say we're greater than 50-50 right now. So,
yeah. Yeah, I love what he says about, like, I mean, he does a lot of videos on the ingredients. I mean, just that alone would signify, what do I really know about what I'm putting into my body? So I think in his own way, he definitely gets his message across, and he does it in his lane, I guess. And I'm not one to say everybody should be talking about this, everybody should be doing something. Like, the pressure that society's been under for the last few years, the fact that the truthers think that we need to add more pressure is probably not exactly the best way to go, because we almost want people to feel invited to our flow of energy. I mean, if we're creating pathways that energetically have this stream of unity and this stream of community and flow, then that's what people are going to be drawn to, and not the, hey, come join the fight over here. Because I stopped a long time ago trying to get the masses. Like, I just thought there's no potency in that, because the potency is in creating with the people that are ready, that are in the minority, ready for change, ready to get their boots on, strap up and go. Like, this is where creative change has always been taking place. It only takes 3.5% to change culture. That's statistically been the case. So we are way past 3.5%. This is the, you know, this is the, like what Dr. Christiane Northrup says, this is like the turning of the century. Like, we're in it, you know, we're here and we're part of it. And that's where we should be focused. And I think that's where a lot of us are moving towards anyway. You know, Pete Evans definitely is. He lives quite close to here, actually. So that's great. And my next question is actually delving into a bit more of a complex territory. It's around the AI subject, which we've sort of danced around a bit this conversation. So this vision of a technology or technologically orientated way of like morphing humans with computers, essentially, which is what Elon Musk very much is putting money towards, and living in smart cities, which they're building like this. I don't know if you've seen it, but in Saudi Arabia, you would have seen the neon. Yeah,
it looks dope, though. It actually looks amazing, but but I know what it stands for. But yeah, please continue.
So for those that don't know, it's like this 170-kilometer line of a smart city, and everything's vertical and built up and automated and AI, driverless cars and trains and everything you can imagine in between. But it is designed to alter, because it's mirrored as well. So you're mirroring into nature, but you don't actually really have that access. And it's almost altering our perception of reality. And in the same way that we talked about before, the media and the psychiatric drugs can also distort reality, this idea that there are so many countries through the UN that have signed up to smart cities and signed up to the post-human narrative, for me, I'm wondering, what does it take? And I don't believe they'll get there. I genuinely, like, I've spoken to professors that have gone to these conferences, I've had them on the show, and they talk to me about how these massive tech giants, they're failing to be able to get it through to the masses, because there's 8 billion people that go, yeah, no, I don't really want my phone in my brain chipped. Like, I think I'm going to draw the line in the sand right there. Like, I'm not going to go for that one. But it is what we're going to be seeing in the next few years, really genuinely what we will be seeing. And I don't believe that humanity is just going to take a whole new path all on its own. Like, I think there'll always be two versions, one with the conveyor belt towards the transhumanism, smart city, internet of bodies world, and the other one coming back to, you know, to nature, which is what so many people I know bought land in the last few years that came out of the cities and went, nah, we're going back on the land. This is biggest lesson. We need to grow our own food, and we need to create village and community. And Dr. Edith Ubuntu Chan is brilliant at, you know, speaking on that topic. And I just think that those two polarities will have to exist, and we'll always have that choice. But this is, we've got to be really clear that the World Economic Forum and the climate change agenda and all of these things to get you to stay in this kind of like vertical reality is what's being pushed in the next few years. I don't think they'll be successful. In fact, I think they're already failing. But to Dr. Joe, to get us kind of like mentally ready, what would you say?
You know, I don't have, here's how I could answer this. This ChatGPT, and again, I don't know if you played around with this thing or not, whatnot, and the people watching this. But you know, this is this AI chatbot where this is like the closest thing that I've witnessed to like some level of AI intelligence. You could have a conversation with this thing. You could ask it to write you an essay. It virtually eliminates the need for any like freelance health and wellness writers now. I actually played around with it and said, what are the top three brain benefits for CBD? And it just, you know, in 500 words, and it just did it for you. You could ask it to code for you. Someone posted a video about how she had this task that she dictated onto her phone, a list of all her tasks. She copied and pasted it onto ChatGPT, asking it to organize in a list of priority. And it actually did it. It simplified it and did it. So what I'm seeing right now is, you know, sadly, the future generation getting lazier and not being able to critically think. They're going to be relying on AI to like think for them. My daughter the other day was saying, like, my goodness, in seventh grade, some of these kids don't know how to write a complete sentence yet. And they're not like, they don't even know how to read, or reading comprehension is like out the window. So I'm seeing like laziness and social intelligence and just basic like linguistics and math skills diminishing right before our very eyes. And I think this is horrible in terms of like our brains, you know, if you don't use your brain, you're going to lose it kind of thing. And I feel like the brain's going to, our minds are going to atrophy over the years as AI advances. The reason why I bring that up is I believe that some people, not your kids and not the people watching this, because we know what's up and we're going to treat make sure our kids are going to be trained to read and utilize our brains to our advantage, obviously. But there's going to be a lot of people who are not aware that's going to go run along with this AI agenda. And they will have no choice but to put a chip in their brain to keep up. And when that happens, my concern is then how is it fair for other people who are trying to get a job? So if I have to compete with some lazy dude who's been smoking weed all his life, didn't want and playing video games, didn't want to do anything, I worked my ass off, and then his rich parents was able to get a Neuralink chip inside of his brain. Then now he has Google or ChatGPT in his mind. He could go to medical school and kick ass while I'm trying to do the normal thing, you know, the organic thing. I cannot compete with that. So yeah, I do see like two separate societies at some point where one's going to embrace AI and they're going to go along and do what they're going to do, and a separate set of community where, and I kind of call it like the Namaste Ones community, where we kind of grow our own food, we have our own system of money, and we'll do our own thing. And a part of me was thinking, like, wait a second, but will these guys, like, if, like, let's just say it's a 30-70 split. Let's just say 70% of people go with this AI agenda and 30% are like, you know what, fuck this, we're going to create our own communities. Will they leave us alone? Or are they going to want to try to conquer us? And I was talking to Alec and he said, hey, guess what? America, at least, I'm not sure about Australia, but America, people have more guns than the army. So they're not going to want to mess with people in the Namaste Wellness community. So yeah, sadly, I do think that there has to be some sort of a separate situation. And back in 2020, my friend, Dr. Tommy John, at the time, we were doing a Health Freedom for Humanity podcast together. And he asked me like how I visualize the future, and everyone has a very positive thing to say, like, oh, I see a new world and we're going to be embracing each other and blah, blah, blah. And I'm the only guy that basically said there has to be a divided nation at this point. No matter what you say, there's just going to be a group of people who are just going to go along with this thing. And I'm sick and tired of trying to convince other people who pretty much made the decision that they want to go along with this to think otherwise. But I want to focus on the people who know what's up, who know how to read, who know how to think, who are into the mind, body, wellness, spirituality community. And let me focus on that. But the truth is, I do believe that there's going to be a divided class, divided classes, and one more into the organics and more into the synthetics. And that's just my truth. I wish I had something more positive to say than that, but I'm just going to keep it real with you. That's just what I see.
And I think you know this, but I'm all about the minority. And so I wholeheartedly agree. And I think once we start down that path of recognizing our tribe on the edge, and moving closer to that, and we will have that divided community. I have no doubt about it. That is the reality, and we have to have the guts. I mean, we think we have the guts now because we've stood the times the last 3 years. Like we've managed these times, right? But we have to have the guts to go all the way to the edges, right? And I can tell you, like I'm a marketer, right? So that's my trade, and it's not always clear what will make any idea, you know, whether you're going this direction or that direction. It's just an idea, right? Significant. We don't know what will make it significantly more remarkable, right? Because a lot of people think if they get this chat chip, they're connected to all of consciousness, you know, like this Black Mirror type episode. Not that I've ever watched them, but you get the gist, right? We have to embrace the fact that they want to move towards algorithms, not organisms, and we want to move towards organisms. This is a completely different mindset, literally. And the fact that the problem we're trying to solve is probably not even the problem that we have right now, but wherever we'll find it, the humility is on the edge, and we'll discover that we're able to solve problems. Like that's what we're designed for. We're designed to create. We're designed. This is a classroom. We're designed to learn. And I think ultimately, when I look at the future, when I look towards the future, I absolutely do see that. I mean, there are people in my own community, and I feel kind of terrible saying this out loud, but it really revved me up, Joe. Like I was just like, people in my own community that are what I would have thought were on the same page, saying AI is actually going to be amazing for spirituality. I was like, what the fuck? And they're like so sure about it. You know, once AI reaches the whole beautiful consciousness understanding of humanity and spirituality, it's going to do so much good. And I'm like, this technology is engineered. There's a whole other understanding of something that's engineered versus something that is from the creator. Like we have the ability to create, they do not. And I think this is really getting warped in the kind of like new agey kumbaya of AI is that, no, I'm sorry, but you will never sell me on the idea that AI is going to make this world a better place. Like it will help us level up and it will help us want to pee, you know, the contrast, but we've got to connect to divinity to do this work. And that's the greatest story. And that's why I think we regard ourselves as sovereign individuals that have, you know, responsibility and take, you know, our values seriously. And on some level, we have to be honest, and we're playing the game of truth and dare on the level of the soul, you know? And I think that's what is so beautiful about the times that we're living in. But please, anyone that's watching this and thinking that Elon Musk is the new age hero and AI is going to help us with our spirituality, maybe look deeper into that, because I'm not interested in serving that narrative or the masses. I've said that I'm here for the minority. I think we've got to embrace the community that we have that are ready and willing to focus their efforts to create and to champion change. And I think that's the world that you and I want to be a part of, and we will be a part of, particularly in the next few years. And we're going to keep using humor. We're going to keep using satire, and we're going to keep bringing solutions to the table. And I think this is, you know, this is what we're all capable of. We had the worst floods in our history in March this year, Dr. Joe. It was, and it's where I live, right? So we had like, in some areas, it was almost 20 meters worth of flooding. And we had friends staying with us, and we had friends with their kids on the roofs for 38 hours waiting to be rescued, because the only people that were allowed to get into boats were vaccinated. And then at some point, the community said, fuck this. They started putting money towards their own helicopters. They got their own tinnies out and started doing their own rescues. And the government did jack shit in this area. The community came back together. We helped each other. I've got goosebumps. We did mud army cleaning out strangers' homes. I mean, there was nowhere you could go that didn't look like a third world country, with hundreds and thousands of people coming from all over to help one another in the community. And they asked me to do a speech during this time, because we had the longest vigil, because we had Australia's first moratorium here where I live in Mullumbimby, and it was the first 5G moratorium, and there was the longest vigil ever on that tower. And during the floods, the largest telco where I used to work, Telstra, came in and did a 5G upgrade. despite the moratorium, despite the longest vigil, right? And when, because they asked me to come and speak about that, and there was probably a crowd of about 400, 500 people, I'd say. And I asked for a show of hands, how many people were called to do something during the floods? And every hand went up, including every child. And then I said, keep your hand up if you were qualified, like you had a degree or some sort of qualification to do what you were doing. And I'm talking like food, mud army, you know, like nursing, whatever needed to be done. I honestly think there was less than a third of the people that kept their hands up. And so we've got to remember that when it comes to the world that we're living in and the times that we're living in, it is our calling that drives us, not our qualifications, right? And this is what we have to come back to. I mean, you're qualified in mental wellness and mental health. I'm qualified in marketing and the telco industry. But at no point do we do what we do because of the qualification. It adds to it, sure, but we do what we do because of a calling. And that's why you talk about, you know, spirituality as part of your program. And this is the stuff that is really what's running why I do this podcast, is because I love speaking to visionaries and I love speaking to people who are answering the call. Literally, it's like God doesn't call the qualified. He already qualified the called. So if you've got a calling, you walk and you surrender to that path, and the amount of things that line up for you on your walk. I mean, I never in a million years thought that I'd be doing this work. I never went to a protest in my life. I never really stood firm on anything, because the system that raised me was just like, sit back, kind of sit in the background, do really good work and get a tick and get an A and get a reward and an award of some sort, but don't make too much noise. Yeah. And what I've realized is I will do what I'm feeling called to do. And that's genuinely the best mental health there is in my life. And
exactly. And you were called to do this work.
Yeah.
I was called to, I mean, forget that qualification, that piece of paper, again, it's just for show. It doesn't really mean it. I mean, it gives me some level of credibility to the people who come here to see me, but you're absolutely right. We were called to do this. And most of what I learned that I share on social media or on podcasts and things like of this nature are from my interactions with my clients and my life experiences. And if I may, I want to share with you a very important story that I believe will change everyone's lives that are listening to this. I actually met this billionaire dude, right? Now, this old fat dude, he's a billionaire, and doesn't look like a billionaire with the way he was dressed and the way, you know, so on. But he comes in and he has anxiety, and for whatever, you know, one of his businesses was going wrong, so he was having anxiety. But after I straightened him out, we kind of got a little close, and I asked him, hey, as a billionaire, on your journey of becoming a billionaire, which that's not really that important to me, but I guess it was for this guy, what was the most important lesson you learned? And he told me that he has two daughters, and all his life, he worked his tail off to make sure that the kids had everything that they could possibly want, that everything that he didn't have. And, you know, now that they're all grown, he has this like mountain home, and he goes to the mountain house once a month, and him and his wife and the two girls, they eat dinner together. And he said, hey girls, remember that time when we went to that, the Eiffel Tower, and we had an amazing dinner there, and we oversaw all of Paris, and we stayed at that like palace hotel, whatever. And the girl said, we don't remember anything from that trip other than that pillow fight that we had at the hotel. And he basically learned at that moment that all his life, he thought that he was giving them the most important thing that he believed was for them, like the wealth and the materialistic riches and all this stuff. But he learned that for them, it was the memory of a pillow fight. And it doesn't take money to have that kind of experience. Now, I actually do believe that the most important thing that we all as humans have is our energy and attention. Our time, energy, and attention. And not all time is created equal. There are some people who are very old right now and they could barely move. And that's not the best time versus like when we're, you know, young and healthy and fit and we can move our body. Not everyone has attention right now. Some people have like cognitive issues. Not everyone has energy either. So if we are lucky enough to have that trio, our time, energy, and attention, I believe that the most important thing is to keep the most important thing, which is specifically to create memories with the people that you love. I cannot think of anything that is more important than that. So a lot of people are pressed for time. They spend their energy and their time and attention on focusing on all this nefarious stuff. And it is important to talk about that 20% of time. But I'm asking everyone 80% of the time, how about we, if we're a little strapped for time, how about we just make it a goal to create memories every single day with the people that we love? I come back home at 8 o'clock. I have maybe an hour and a half to spend with my kids. You know, going back to work the next day, and they got school and all tennis and all this. And I try at least every single day to create one memory. It could be a pillow fight. It could be a ping pong match. It could be a wrestling thing. But I try to make them laugh, and I want to make sure that they have a memory of their dad, because I can't think of anything that's more important than that. So if I may at least share that with your audience, that, you know, we could focus on a lot of things, and we talked about some really important things today. But if we could collectively have that, you know, conscious efforts on a regular basis to create that memory with the people that we love, I think that we're going to be in a much better place in the near future, regardless of what these idiots try to throw at us. So.
Oh, that's such a beautiful message, Joe. Honestly, creating memories. I was going to ask you, do you have any words of wisdom before we go? I think that was it. It is the most important message is, you know, to create memories and to be completely immersed in that memory. And I know that so many people try to capture moments with technology, but when you're so completely immersed in what you're doing with your children and with the people that you love, that's the greatest attention they'll ever need and cherish. So thank you for that reminder. My grandmother, she passed away with dementia, and I did a speech at the funeral, and it was all about cherishing memories. And that is, that is such a beautiful, beautiful message. Thank you. And tell us where people can find you, your work. You know, we'll obviously put everything in the show notes, but give us a bit of a rundown of what you're up to now or in the next year and where we can support.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, what's interesting is that my social media account, it's mostly people supporting from the US, like LA and New York, followed by Australia. You know, so my second largest supporters are from Australia. So yeah, I pretty much that's like the hub, the central station of all my other networks and so on. So I guess my Instagram, YojiMD, YojiMD. And then you guys could probably find everything else that I'm into. And yeah, I think my mission moving forward is to bring awareness on technology addiction, because addiction psychiatrist. So I could talk about drugs and alcohol, but I think the more urgent issue right now is to raise awareness on technology addiction and trying to get people to put down the phone a little bit more and read more books. And, you know, so technology addiction, I focus on mind, body, spirituality. I feel like, you know, 60% of the people that support my account are in the spiritual namaste wellness community, which I think is very bizarre that they're into the kind of stuff that I'm into, but I'm super honored by that. And that's kind of the direction that I'm probably going to be going into more, a little bit more of like psychedelics and spirituality and expanding our awareness and consciousness. I never, like you, thought that I'd be talking about things like this, but hey, you and I were called to do this. The people watching this were called to be a part of this too. So I'm just going with what I'm being pulled into right now. So that's the direction that I believe I'm going to be going to.
Well, thank you for picking up the call and taking us along that journey with you. I think it's a beautiful thing to witness your creativity, your knowledge and your wisdom in what you do. And obviously I can't speak for all Australians, but definitely I believe I would be speaking for the audience that follows you is we in Australia, we have a really, we enjoy the truth in comedy and we enjoy the truth in sort of taking life a little bit more easy and easygoing. We haven't really had that experience over the last few years. So, you know, we have to acknowledge that there are people out there that keep bringing us back to ourselves, like I said, and I definitely think you're one of them. And I really, we're cheering you on. I mean, really a cheering you on to keep doing this great work and to bring people back to their humanness, their consciousness, their health, their ability to love what it is that they can create. And yeah, I really appreciate you, Joe.
I appreciate you, Renat, and the good people watching this. Thank you so much for having me on. It was a privilege and honor to vibe with you and the good people here today. And I know your time zone and my time zone is a little bit different, but we got to do like an Instagram live where I get to interview you this time, because you seem to know a lot about the 5G money situation. Yeah. And I think you and I could just vibe on another level with all this technology stuff, which I love talking about. So we'll message each other and we'll set something up in the new year.
Definitely. Looking forward to it. Thank you everyone for tuning in. I'm sure you're going to get to watch this over and over again, because I think it's just one of the ones that you'll come back to in many years to come and refer to. Remember where I heard Dr. Joe say this? Well, I think this is going to be one of those interviews that will be a reference point. So thank you, Joe. And thank you to everyone listening. And we'll see you for the next episode of the We Know Show. Bye, everyone.
There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection, but now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.